Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go on a Monday, a packed Monday. This is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, we are live in Los Angeles on iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. 1 hour from now, one of our better ones, where Colin was right, where Colin was wrong. I'm plenty of both on a draft weekend, an NBA playoff weekend, and Joy Taylor is joining me for hour one and hour two, hour three today. Joy, how are you?
I'm great. Good morning.
It was a busy weekend.
Very
I tell you,
busy.
March and April have been so good for us in sports, so good for us in sports. And I want to start with the NBA, the Rockets. And the Warriors. The Rockets played them close, and the Warriors pulled away at the end. There was a lot of controversy, not really, but, you know, the Rockets are complaining, we only shot 29 free throws, blah, 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 blah. This is very interesting. So every year in the winter months, depending on where you live, that's 2 months, 3 months, 5 months, every year in the winter it gets cold. Everywhere in America, except maybe Florida. And so that's why I have a coat. Because every year, at the same time, it gets cold. So I have a coat. I don't blame the weather. Man, it's cold. I didn't see it coming. In the NBA, similarly, every single year at this time, veteran NBA referees allow more contact. That's a you problem. Buy a coat. Don't blame the refs. Every year at this time, all the young refs that get manipulated throughout the regular season, they don't officiate in the playoffs. You get to the second round, the conference finals, the finals. It is the best refs, a lot of veteran refs, and they don't let you manipulate. Same in hockey, same in football. Less is called. Okay? Give me a break, Houston. The Houston Rockets have added a heavy dose of manipulation to their offense over the last several years. A, it makes it a much more difficult team to officiate. They are hard to officiate. You're never going to officiate the Rockets perfectly. It's hard for veteran officials who have been in these playoffs for 20 years. They're a hard team to officiate. And B, the officials have a right to take some of that manipulation territory back from the young officials who allowed it all regular season. James Harden this year added a dimension to his offense. Did you watch? I did. He started falling to the floor 5 times a game. He didn't do that 3 years ago. Did James Harden start falling to the floor because it was some physical disability? It was equilibrium. He's got a medical condition. No. He started falling to the floor, adding a layer of manipulation to his offensive game. And the referees have a right to dictate terms in the playoffs. He led the NBA in free throws once again. That's fine. But the refs have a right to create their own territory. And they're going to scale back on giving him all the calls all the young refs did during the regular season. The referees have a right to set a tone in a game or a series. I attended and covered many Mike Tyson fights. He was officiated differently every time. Older refs are playoff refs. And they're not going to let manipulation take control of a series. You see it in hockey. You get to the second round, the cup finals, generally refs swallow whistles. They don't want to decide games. You go ask the New Orleans Saints in the NFL. Remember that Saints-Rams game? 4 hours. The refs let clutching and grabbing go all up and down the sidelines. Why? And even though this was a bad call, why? We're not going to decide. We're not going to create big plays on pass interference. Not every officiating crew is the same. In the NFL, it's understood some officiating crews call more holding, call less holding, call more PI, call less PI. Don't blame the refs. If you as an organization can't figure out that manipulation has never won the championship, best players have, that's a you problem. NFL officials, it is understood some guys call holding, some crews don't. Belichick's got a book a mile long. Kurt Schilling told me years ago, he goes, I knew every home plate umpire's plate was different. There are umpires in baseball that have called 7 no-hitters, 8, 9. Other guys have never called 1. The strike zone changes. It's your job to know the umpire's strike zone. And I do think there is a responsibility not on the referees, but on a GM, a coach, a team, the analytics department, to know what officials give you what and what veteran officials will not give you that young officials will. They're not going to let James Harden falling down, flopping, kicking out, act, control the league. Start holding your team responsible and your stars responsible and your analytic department responsible and your GM responsible. Stop only holding the refs responsible. Saints fans, you had opportunities in that game. You didn't get it done. James Harden said something after the game, and I just rolled my eyes with this. Pretty funny. I want you to listen to this.
I just want a fair chance, man. Call the game how it's supposed to be called, and that's it. And I'll live with the results. But when you, especially we all know what happened, you know, a few years back with Kawhi, like that can change an entire series. Just call the game how it's supposed to be called, and we'll live with the results.
Oh, interesting. Isn't that what James Harden's opponent said all year long? Call the game the way it's supposed to be called. Don't let him kick out and fall to the floor and manipulate the traveling call. What James Harden complained about is what his opponents complained about all season long. The extra step nobody else in the league is allowed to take. The constant flopping and falling. Everybody that guards him complains. By the way, when you add this layer of manipulation to your game, it is harder to officiate. The Rockets are harder to officiate. I'm not saying the refs were perfect yesterday, but I always said this with Shaq. Shaq was harder to officiate. He weighed as much as a cruise liner. You could bang into Shaq, it would knock over every guy in the league except Shaq. And Shaq used to say, guys, hang on me. And it was like, yeah, they weren't anti-Shaq. Shaq was harder to officiate. Michael Jordan was harder to officiate. And James Harden's harder to officiate. But you're not going to be allowed the level of manipulation you're allowed in the regular season. They gave it to you a couple times yesterday, but veteran refs have seen this game before. They've seen this game before, and refs absolutely have a right to set a tone in a game in a series. And the officials yesterday said in the series, James, the fall and flopping, this is not Tuesday night in January in Minnesota. It's not a bunch of kid refs. Not every ref in the NBA. They're all human. They're all different. Some are way more capable than others. We know in the NFL, you ever watch the big NFL games? You ever notice you see the same 8-9 refs? Because they put the best refs on the big TV games. Not every NBA ref is great. The very good ones, they're officiating now, and they're not buying that manipulation slash gimmick. I still think Houston can win the series. I picked Golden State to win it all, but I have no problem what I saw yesterday. All right, the NFL draft this weekend. I watched virtually all of it. I'm not going to lie. I love that six-rounder from Boise State. I saw a bunch of headlines. Everybody wants to know who won the draft. I saw this one. Woo! New England won the draft! Really? New England won the draft. You do realize it's one of the most complex offensive systems in the NFL, and most rookies get overwhelmed by it. Not to mention, the New England Patriots don't play rookies much. It's useless to predict drafts, but especially New England's. They're different. It is more cerebral. A lot of rookies get overwhelmed there. By the way, they didn't address the tight end situation. They didn't draft a tight end. What was their number one need? I could argue wide receiver and tight end. Let's look at New England's picks. The first two guys, it is assured, will play a bunch. N'Keal Harry and Jo'Wan Williams, a corner from Vanderbilt. They'll play a bunch. After that, by their third pick, Chase Winovich, Michigan. That's the kind of guy that would literally be a bust on 22 teams in the league. I think he'll work. For New England, but he's no guarantee physically. He doesn't pop and jump off the TV physically. They also picked up a running back, Damian Harris from Alabama, who can't catch. Sort of a big deal with Tom Brady. I think he'll be their third best running back last year. I don't think New England got the most guys that can play. How are we judging drafts? First of all, if Josh Rosen can play and goes to Miami and is their starting quarterback for 7 years, Miami won the draft. If Kyler Murray goes to Arizona and cuts it up, Arizona won the draft. The bottom line, if Daniel Jones kills it for the Giants, they won the draft. The draft winner is the team Seattle years ago that got Russell Wilson in the third round and got a Hall of Fame quarterback. That was called a bad draft. If you didn't draft a quarterback, there's very little chance you will have won the draft because that's the difference maker in the NFL. I'll tell you three drafts I liked. I thought Green Bay, the first four guys Green Bay drafted will all play. I thought the first five guys the Indianapolis Colts drafted, they went and got speed and need, will all play. And the first five guys for the Baltimore Ravens will all play. In fact, their fifth player is a guard from Oklahoma, Ben Powers. He's a grinder. He's perfect for Lamar Jackson in that offense. Ravens, Packers, Colts. I thought their first four to five guys will all play. I'm pretty confident they got guys that fit, guys that work, guys they can be patient with, those three. But let's be honest. If Kyler Murray's a home run for Arizona, they won the draft by a mile. It won't even be close. I mean, the Seahawks won a draft with Russell Wilson. It was called a terrible draft. They won a Super Bowl, got to two, and have a Hall of Fame quarterback. That was ripped as a draft. They won that draft by 1,000 miles over everybody else. I will tell you, though, a draft I did not like. The New York Jets. Now, their first pick is the best player in the draft, Quinnen Williams. But after that, they are a rebuilding franchise. Okay, when you're a rebuilding franchise, fewer risks, please. Take risks if you're the Steelers, if you're the Rams, if you're the Chiefs or the Patriots. You can swing for the fence because you've established your culture and you have star quarterbacks and star coaches and star rosters. But when you're building like the Colts, when you're rebuilding like the Colts, you get dependable, smart picks. You change the culture into dependable grown-ups. You'll still hit some home runs because you generally draft in the top 10. So the Jets' first pick is great. After that, it was medical issues, head cases, guys who were wildly inconsistent college players. I don't need to name them. You can see them on the screen on FS1. When you're building a culture is not when you should take wild swings on players who are inconsistent in college. Inconsistent college player is inconsistent NFL player. Medical issue college player Sam Bradford is medical issue NFL player. Guys don't suddenly get healthier in a more violent sport. So did New England win? Hardly. I'd take Baltimore, Green Bay, and the Colts in terms of top four to five picks. I'm not going to waste any time breaking down a fifth, sixth, seventh rounder. But I will tell you, the Jets, I just don't like their belief system on drafts. They're taking wild swings when they're rebuilding. I don't believe you do that. Jets have shown a history here in the last 3 or 4 years. They'll get the first pick right. They whiff a lot after that. The Colts get their first pick right, and their second, their third, their fourth, and their fifth. Inconsistency at the college level almost always equals inconsistency or bust at the NFL level. The one draft I didn't like after their first pick was the New York Jets.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
My favorite NBA reality check for all the Michael Jordan worshipers out there. Many of you in your 20s and 30s didn't even watch him play live. I saw every series and every playoff game he ever played. He's the greatest player probably in league history. LeBron, I think, in his prime was close. I think Magic in his prime was very close. But here's a reality check with Michael Jordan. Do you know what his record was in the playoffs before Scottie Pippen arrived? Oh, I do. 1-9, swept twice. What up, bruh? Doesn't fall in line with all your MJ worship. 1-9. He was crappy in the playoffs. Swept twice. Because what we do in basketball, especially the NBA, we glom onto the star, and we think the star decides everything. If that was the case, then Kevin Durant would have won the West every single year. But his number two was unreliable, Westbrook. And LeBron has only had great success when he's got an all-star as his number two, Kyrie, Wade, or Bosch. Michael Jordan didn't do anything in this league except score. He didn't do anything in the postseason until he got Scottie Pippen, one of the best 50 players of all time. We pay attention to the one, and the ones are key. But ones don't win in this league without a two. It's why I never bought into Denver, why I think the Raptors have limitations, and why I didn't buy into Milwaukee over Boston. I'll take Boston narrowly. If you look at the greatest team in league history, it's probably the Bulls in 95. The second best player was Pippen, a top 50 player. Second best team I've ever seen is the Warriors. Their second best player, Steph Curry, the only unanimous MVP in league history. The third best team I've ever seen, maybe the second best, is the Showtime Lakers. Magic, the second best player was Kareem. Probably the best center in league history. By the way, Shaq and Kobe is probably the third or fourth best team I've ever seen. Whichever you preferred, it was a Hall of Famer, was the second best player. The Milwaukee Bucks' second best player is Chris Middleton. He's a hard worker and a good kid. But he played college for 3 years. Translation? It's not that gifted. Then he went to the NBA, rookie year, averaged 6 points, and was demoted to the Fort Wayne Mad Ants. He has become a very good player. But if he's your number two, if he's your Pippen, if he's your Kobe, if he's your Steph, you're not winning the title. And I don't think you're winning this series. Now, Boston doesn't have a dominating number two either. But let's just, for the sake of argument, take Jason Tatum. Jason Tatum was a high school All-American and then a college All-American and only had to play 1 year of college at the best program, Duke, and then NBA people said, get out of college, you're too good. Oh, and then as a rookie, made the all-rookie team and in the playoffs was actually shockingly good as a rookie. He didn't get demoted to the Fort Wayne Mad Ants. Now, he's not one of the stronger twos in NBA history. But he is a transformational basketball talent who's still a baby. Now, you can argue Al Horford's a two and Gordon Hayward's a two or Jason Tatum's a two. I would say Tatum is their second best basketball talent. That's why I think this is a close series. The Houston Rockets' number two player is a nine-time All-Star and a first ballot Hall of Famer, Chris Paul. And why the Warriors are going to win, their number two is Steph Curry. Maybe the most transformational basketball player of my life outside of LeBron, Magic, and MJ. Nothing against Chris Middleton, but the reason I took Boston in this series was their two is a four, or at best a three, Chris Middleton. I like him. He's not a two. Jason Tatum has nights he's an absolute two, and I think long-term he's absolutely a two. He didn't play particularly well in game one. But we spend so much time looking at the one. Kevin Durant got to one finals in the West before Golden State. Because he and the two didn't work. Look at the dynasty in our lifetimes. One of them, Spurs. Tony Parker was an MVP candidate, and he was a two to Duncan. Then they switched, and then Duncan was the two and was a first ballot Hall of Famer. I can remember watching Larry Bird have back-to-back playoff games where he scored 8 points, but they had a two named Kevin McHale who could score 24. It's not just about the one. Denver doesn't have Jamal Murray, a dependable two. Chris Middleton should be a three or a four. They're not championship teams. Now, I don't think Boston has the best two in the world, but he is an absolutely elite basketball talent who, the reason Jason Tatum's not a one, he's too inconsistent. But on the night he's good, oh, he's really good.
What's going on, everybody? John Middlecoff, Three and Out podcast on the Colin Cowherd Podcast Network. I'm talking all football this week, all NFL draft. I go over the things I hated and the things I loved in the first round. The one thing of the entire weekend that really stood out to me, that kind of melts your heart, in the Tyreek Hill situation. Is that a royal disaster for the Chiefs? Three and Out podcast with me, John Middlecoff.
All right, we do it every Monday. Is that we make a lot of bold predictions. I think it's what makes our show fun. We're not paralyzed by being wrong. Sometimes we are. Colin right, Colin wrong. Let's go.
Where Colin was right.
Well, it must have been a power outage in Milwaukee. I didn't get many tweets from Wisconsin after the Bucks lost the first game of that series. It's the worst game one loss by a number one seed since 84. Hey, Milwaukee, you haven't been in the playoffs much for 30 years, so let me tell you how it works. Regular season performance is not an indication of postseason excellence. And this is a team that doesn't have a dominant two. And it's also a team that doesn't have a lot of experience in the playoffs, and they got outcoached and outplayed badly at home. Giannis was a minus 24. He got dunked on by Jaylen Brown. Now, he's still a great player. I think they win the next game, and they could certainly win the series. But if you listen to Milwaukee fans, they thought they were going to shred the Celtics in four or five games. This is a long series with two excellent coaches. Boston's got, I believe, the better closer. Kyrie Irving is harder to manipulate than Giannis because he can handle the ball, and he's also a great perimeter shooter and a driver. But Boston's defense basically said, we'll take Giannis out. What's your second pitch? And your second pitch, not much to crow about.
Where Colin was wrong.
I've had about enough of Draymond Green. In fact, Steve Kerr was seen this year saying, I'm about done with Draymond Green, but he has been excellent in Game 6 against the Clippers, and he was great yesterday. Against the Clippers in Game 6, he went 16 points, 10 assists, 14 rebounds, and 4 blocks, and was crucial. And yesterday, 14-9-9. Listen, he is not the player consistently he was 2 years ago. But the last game against the Clippers and the first game against the Rockets, he does add a girth dimension, a tough guy, an annoying guy, a physical component to the Warriors that, frankly, they desperately need now that Boogie Cousins is out. And I thought he felt really important against Houston, so I was wrong on that.
Where Colin was right?
Well, Josh Rosen, as predicted, is just too good not to go for a second-round pick. And I thought Miami smartly went and grabbed him. And if he ends up flourishing, heck of a day for Miami. We've also been saying his arrogance is just, you can't draft him. Well, he handled the trade perfectly and graciously, thanking the state, thanking Kyler Murray. Here's a little bit of it.
Cardinals fans, thank you so much for all of the continued support this past year. I know we didn't win as many games as we all would have hoped, but I had an unbelievable time here in the desert. Kyler, I just want to congratulate you and your family on getting drafted. Arizona is a really special place, and you're going to love playing and living here.
Okay, maybe he's just faking it and he's inauthentic, but I got to tell you something. A lot of bad guys all over sports. Show me proof this is some sort of bad kid. There's a lot of projecting here. I'd like some identification, some proof, some video. I thought the kid handled it wonderfully. And I'm happy for Miami because I think Miami just got a free quarterback for 3 years.
Absolutely.
He's not going to cost anything. Arizona's already paid his guaranteed money. It's free.
And for people being cynical about the video, everyone doesn't do a video. People get traded all the time and don't do videos.
That's right.
Why is this inauthentic?
Where Colin was wrong.
I said the New England Patriots would move up in this draft. Well, they moved up, sideways, down. They moved more than anybody. They had 4 trades Friday. They went down, they went up. They dealt with the Rams a lot. Clearly the Rams, Sean McVay and Belichick have a relationship here. They were the most active team in the draft, but they did not move up. And also, they didn't get a tight end. And the tight end was like the second most important part. So they also took a wide receiver, by the way, in round one. And I have said for years that they don't take wide receivers ever in round one. So they went, they traded down. They went and got a wide receiver. They didn't get a tight end. Wasn't right on that. Patriots did the opposite of what almost everything I thought they would do.
Where Colin was right.
Well, I said a couple of months ago that it just looked like to me that Kevin Durant was not only the best player in the league, but had kind of pulled away from everybody. He had 35 yesterday, and he didn't shoot a bunch of threes. And in his last 5 games, since he said, I'm Kevin Durant, you know who I am, he's not only averaging 40, he's shooting 91% free throws, 40% three-pointers, and 55% field goal. Most of the great players in the NBA are called volume scorers, meaning they need a bunch of shots. This dude doesn't even need a bunch of shots. This dude doesn't even need threes to get to 35. I want you to listen to the LA Clippers after they lost the series. Two of their better players, Patrick Beverley, Lou Williams, had a great response in trying to defend Kevin Durant.
You know, he's a hell of a player. The shots he took, you know, he made some tough shots. If you was a coach, what'd you tell us to do? Thank you.
We tried everything. All right. So we tried everything. We had several different coverages for KD, and
they didn't work.
I mean, listen, those are great dudes and good players, but he's MJ, he's LeBron in his prime, he's Kobe, he's Bird, he's Magic. Kevin Durant now, he is separated, as long as LeBron is out with an injury, maybe changes next year, but he's just separated from everybody else. And this is what's happened my entire life watching the league. The best player, when MJ was number one, and number two was like Barkley, and Barkley was great, but he wasn't MJ, not even close defensively.
Where Colin was wrong.
You know, I thought when Jeannie Buss took over the Lakers and fired her brother Jim, I thought, okay, we're going to get less chaos, a grown-up, we're going to see a game plan. And my knock is, it feels like the same thing that drove me crazy with Jim Buss. It's small, it's the country store. You know, I want to see Whole Foods. I want to see a national chain. I want to see big here. I love the Rambis family. They're wonderful people. But now they're involved in the coaching search, and I don't really understand that, and they don't have a coach. A rival executive told me this weekend, it's like they're becoming kind of seen as like the NBA's most dysfunctional organization. I mean, in Los Angeles, clearly the Clippers now at least have a game plan. Really feel like they're completely buttoned up. And I like Jeannie and I know Jeannie, but I kind of thought there was going to be a different level of accountability and professionalism and kind of on a macro level, a corporatization of the Lakers when Jim left and Jeannie took over. But it feels too family. It feels too small and I don't like it.
Where Colin was right.
Dave Gettleman of the Giants. He keeps trying to BS us. He said, quote, this weekend, I know two teams would have taken Daniel Jones before number 17. Oh, really? So you were sure you had to take Daniel Jones at 6 because you were sure two teams were going to take him at 17, even though Denver, sources saying now Denver had no interest in him. This is a guy who knew what Denver was going to do in the draft in Washington, but didn't know this a week ago.
During the season, I had gone to see Dwayne at Ohio State. I'd seen Dwayne play in the Big 12. Is that the Big 12 anymore? I don't even know. The championship game, you know, in Indianapolis.
Okay. So you didn't know Ohio State was in the Big 10, but you knew what teams in the draft were going to do. Stop BSing us. You're over your skis. You're over your head. You're an assistant GM. You shouldn't be running a $5 billion organization. Don't tell me you knew what other NFL teams were going to do, because none of us do. And I mean none of us do. And then tell me you don't know Ohio State's in the Big Ten. Guy's over his skis, has been for 2 years. This proves it again.
Where Colin was wrong.
Kawhi Leonard's now 14-0 against the Sixers. I'm not going to really call this series. A lot of people I know like Toronto in this series. They think Philadelphia is too dysfunctional. The baby dinosaurs had a nice weekend. My thing on Kawhi is I think he's a very odd franchise player. He doesn't pass and he doesn't communicate. I think I would struggle with him being my franchise guy. I like talking and passing. But he is a tremendous player. And there are times, a lot of them, he looks like the second best player in the NBA. And I got to tell you, Philadelphia is in trouble here. It's a bad matchup. They just don't have anybody that works against him. And again, he had 45 in game one. He's 14-0 against the Sixers. He's a really different personality, and he's hard for me to get my hands around. But you can't deny he's fantastic on both ends of the floor.
Where Colin was right.
Well, once Seattle signed Russell Wilson to that massive contract, I said, okay, you better figure out a way to get a bunch of draft picks. Hey, you don't have any. Seattle turned 4 draft picks on Wednesday into 11 by Saturday. It was a great move and the exact move the Seahawks should make. Listen, once you pay a quarterback over $30 million, you've got to get a bunch of draft picks. Green Bay's done this. And you got to start drafting the other side of the football because you got to get cheap labor. Because you're spending so much money, so much of your cap space, 12-15% on one guy, that you got to get really inexpensive on other areas. And how do you do that? Get a bunch of draft picks, which allows you to whiff on some. But if you can hit on 50 or 60%, then you solve your financial dilemma. And tip of the cap to John Snyder and Pete Carroll. They went from 4 to 11 draft picks, and they may miss on 5. But they need 6 new players, and that's how you do it.
Where Colin was right.
I have always defended super teams. I don't think people root for the underdog. They say they do, but they don't watch the underdog. And the Avengers movie made $1.2 billion in 3 days. There's not an underdog in that movie. It is the ultimate Golden State Warriors of movies. It's all stars. Nobody wants to watch the Denver Nuggets. Nobody cares outside of that area code in Colorado. The Denver Nuggets. Stars overwhelmingly are good for sports, good for box office, good for ratings. Don't tell me you don't like the Warriors. Golden State and Houston's going to get a bigger number than Denver and Portland and Milwaukee and Boston and Philadelphia, Toronto. The Avengers proved it. When I first started in this business years ago, one of my first takes was, I don't like the underdog. I want Duke to end up in the Final Four every year along with Kentucky, Kansas, and, you know, Syracuse. And the Avengers is the opposite of underdog and the biggest biggest grossing movie ever for 3 days.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Mark Schlereth, 3 Super Bowl rings, a multiple-time Pro Bowler. You know, it's funny about Josh Rosen. You did multiple Arizona Cardinal games this year.
Yes, I did.
And it's very easy to look at his numbers and go, he's a bum. But I actually watched them because I know the guys that run the organization, and I know Josh's family, and I thought, I'm going to watch Josh.
Sure.
What is your interpretation of his rookie year and now going to Miami?
I don't care. Like, you could put Iron Man behind the offensive line that he played behind,
and
you're going to struggle.
Yeah.
Like, I looked at the Arizona Cardinals just from a pure talent standpoint. O-line was horrendous. But beyond that, I mean, David Johnson, literally, and if he was sitting right here, he'd agree with me, he looked like he forgot how to play football.
Right.
Like, there were so many busts, so many mistakes.
Yes, there was.
Across the board.
Yeah.
There was two, you know, the volume of offense they tried to install under Mike McCoy, for whatever reason, it was too much. They couldn't grasp it. They were awful up front. They're awful in the running back department. Larry Fitzgerald, God bless him, because he's one of the great players that's ever played this game. He is truly a pro's pro. But when he's your most dynamic athlete at the receiver position in year 14 or 15 or whatever it was, like, you've got problems. And that was across the board with the Arizona Cardinals. So I don't care who was playing quarterback for the Arizona. That guy wasn't going to have success. And then he took a beating. I saw, and this will be something that bothers people. I saw an Atlanta game as I was preparing to call the Falcons game where he got sacked 6 times. He must have got hit 15 times. And it was late in the fourth quarter, and you could just see, like,
he was tired of
it. He was like, I'm gonna get killed out here. Like, I'm done.
Yeah.
So there was that part of it. And obviously, as a football player, you know, that bothers you, but you understand that was a bad football team.
Yeah. I want to go to the Denver Broncos, who drafted Drew Lock. Now, I'm not a huge Flacco fan, but I do think he fits the profile of what John likes, big, strong kid. Denver gets cold, November, December, January. The history of the franchise is got to be able to throw the ball through a little bit of wind in Denver. Mm-hmm. And Flacco, I think, can do that. Then they went and got Drew Lock. Does that mean, what, you know, you live in Denver, you know Elway, mm-hmm. you know what the Broncos do. What does that tell me? What's the message there?
I think there's a security blanket there. You're not forced to play Drew Lock.
Right.
He's a guy that they liked from the evaluation standpoint that they thought he was the best quarterback available.
All right.
That fits their profile because John Elway does not want to go to 5'10". Like, that to me is just like, you know, that would be like pulling teeth.
Right.
That's not who he is. So he fit the profile, and he thought he was the best athlete, the best quarterback, had this best skill set.
Yeah, but by the way, a lot of people, all scouts said, he was the best raw talent. He and Kyler Murray were the best raw talent in the draft.
Right. I think it's really interesting because, you know, we all want to slap a grade on the draft, right? And we'll never know until, you know, 2-3 years down the road when we see these guys and how they develop and essentially how they adhere and how they play in the National Football League, because we've seen a lot of great college football players that get into the league and they're overwhelmed by the league. And then we've seen guys that are free agents that come in and thrive in the league. So it's you know, that's a tricky thing, but they move back 10 spots. They move from 10 to 20. They got Noah Fant, who's a legit first rounder. Dalton Risner is a kid that on every like mock draft, he was drafted somewhere between 20 and 32.
Yeah.
So he's like a legit first round talent.
And then they went out and got a franchise quarterback.
And they got a franchise quarterback who was in the first round in just about everybody's mock draft. So you essentially traded back 10 spots and picked up 2 extra first rounders. You know, I mean, obviously they were drafted in the second, but I think you have to look at that and say, hey, if Flacco is truly in the prime of his career, like John Elway has said multiple times, great. We've got a backup for the next 3-4 years. And if he's not,
you get, by the way,
great.
The way his contract works, you pay him for 2 years, he's gone, the next kid's in.
He's got 1 year of guaranteed money, then 2 years left after that aren't guaranteed, so you can cut him for nothing.
Okay, didn't know that. So he's only got 1 big year of money.
He's got 1 year of guaranteed money on his deal.
All right, I thought it was 2, so that's good. You know, it was interesting over the weekend. Dave Gettleman, I think we've all met this guy.
Sure.
Big story guy, but doesn't really know anything. He's fooling you. And those guys are always exposed. Dave Gettleman last week acknowledged he didn't know what conference Ohio State played in. It's been 103 years, Big Ten. That, but then he wants me to believe they took Daniel Jones at six because he knew what Denver and Washington wanted to pick, which both have said they got the guy they wanted. So I think we have a vice president who is now the president. This happens all the time in politics. Joe Biden doesn't feel as presidential, but I thought he was a good two, right? Like Dave Gettleman, I think there's just a lot of BS happening, and I think he's getting caught on camera. Am I wrong?
I know, and like Dave Gettleman was a scout in Denver when I played there.
Okay.
So, like, Dave Gettleman is a guy that will, like, he is a build your team from the inside out guy.
Yeah.
Here was my biggest issue with Dave. Like, if you love the guy, great. Do you want to marry the guy, or do you just want to date the guy for a while, right? Because you took him at six, and then the whole excuse for taking him at six, like, you're essentially acquiescing to the media going, well, there's a reason because we didn't think you'd be available at 15 because we had good intel that two other teams liked him at 15. I love the guy. I took my guy at six. He's going to be my future franchise
and
after Eli.
And stop talking. Yeah, stop.
Stop talking.
Yes.
Right? Like, you don't have to explain yourself. This was the guy that I evaluated that I think has the most upside potential and the highest ceiling in this draft, and he was tutored by Cutcliffe, who was the guy who tutored, you know, Peyton Manning and Eli. This is my guy.
And for the record,
end of story.
So often in this sport, I've seen this with Gruden, just stop talking at the podium. Like, I talk for a living. I make mistakes. I get it. But if I ran Fox, you would rarely see me talk, and if I did, I would be succinct.
Right.
Gettleman's a rambler.
Right.
And you're like, Dave, just say, you know, I would have walked up and said, I got to be honest with you. He's the closest thing to Eli Manning I've seen in this draft in a decade. And everybody would be like, oh, we got two Super Bowls with Eli. I'm good with that.
Right.
Because everybody would know you don't meet Eli now. You mean Eli when he came in.
When he came in.
Just
right.
Because I think you can make that argument. I had a scout tell me about a month ago. They said he said he thought they would get the Daniel Jones at 17. And he goes, you can sell him as the next Eli. Gettleman never sold him the whole weekend as the next Eli. That's all you had to do. Instead of just rambling and Ohio State plays in the Big 12. God.
Just making stuff up and then, well, I got good intel. And, you know, part of the whole draft process is the subterfuge, right? You're lying to everybody. So I just like, if you like a guy, you evaluate a guy, and you think that guy is a generational player, then own it. This is my guy. it's my guy, and guess what? I get to make the decisions.
Yeah. Mark Schlereth. Great seeing you, buddy.
Yeah, likewise, bud.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
You know, there's the old saying, don't bite the hand that feeds you, right? Understand who has helped you in life and don't turn on them. James Harden, who's been the beneficiary of so many baskets and points. James Harden essentially travels on all his shots. Everybody in the league is complaining about it. Every player is complaining about it. The officials have had a hard time officiating it. It's been the talk of the NBA season the last 2 years. James Harden takes a step back that many people consider to be a traveling, and they don't call it. And it's allowed James Harden to take a massive leap in production. Yet Harden yesterday was complaining about the very people who have been feeding him for years and allowing borderline calls, the refs. Here it is.
I just want a fair chance, man. Call the game how it's supposed to be called, and that's it. And I'll live with the results. Like, that can change an entire series. Just call the game how it's supposed to be called, and we'll live with the results.
Well, the knock, of course, is everybody has been claiming that James Harden, they wish the game would be called correctly, which is traveling for a step back. So he has benefited greatly from that call. Magic Johnson used to palm the ball and, you know, benefited greatly from that. They never called it. Michael Jordan had a couple of back-to-the-basket moves where he moved his pivot foot and looked like he traveled, and they let him have it. They often do this. If a star creates kind of a new step, a new move, they allow it. But Chris Broussard made a point about James Harden complaining.
First of all, the one player that should not be complaining about getting calls or not getting calls is James Harden. He gets more calls than any player. That's well documented.
Now, just to show you how staggering it is, here's free throw attempts in the last 5 years combined. Harden's number one. Westbrook is two. He has almost 1,000 more free throws. And if you look at who's 2 and 3, Westbrook and DeMar DeRozan, those are highly athletic players who are simply hard to defend because of their athletic ability. You're constantly chasing them. Harden is not that level of athlete. So what it tells you is officials are calling fouls against Harden and his step back moves, not because he's just more athletic, not because he gets, because they have allowed his step back move. Harden is on a historic pace in free throws. Here's the three players that have led the NBA in free throw attempts in 5 straight years. And here's what's ironic. Harden, Karl Malone, and Wilt. And during each of the 5-year stretches in which they have led the NBA in free throw attempts, 15 years, no titles. Because in Harden's case, in Karl Malone's case, and in Wilt's case, early with the Sixers, if you think you're going to win the NBA championship at the free throw line, you are not, mailman. Let me deliver some news to you. You're not winning titles that way. Referees in hockey, basketball, and football do not want to decide championships. In hockey, football, and basketball, I've seen it for 40 years. They swallow whistles. Ask the Saints. Don't blame the officials if you don't know that going in. And I really, like Chris Broussard said earlier, I think the Rockets came into this series analytically thinking, we got to get to the free throw line. That's a you problem. The refs are not going to allow this series to be decided at the free throw line. By the way, the NBA today came out with their 2-minute report. So the NBA comes out, and by the way, the NBA has never been afraid to rip its own officials. In fact, I've complained the 2-minute report is not a great look for your league. They came out with their 2-minute report. They looked over it, and based on the rules, James Harden draws Draymond Green into the air during his shot attempt. Put this up full screen. And Green jumps in front of Harden and would have missed him if Harden hadn't extended his legs. That's not an opinion. That is how the NBA, after watching that tape 100 times, that's how they call it. So, Houston, your opinion? That is contact created by Harden. And the NBA came out today in their 2-minute report an hour ago and said, yeah, we would have called that on Harden over Draymond Green. And to Doug Gottlieb's point, if you jump straight up, I have to give you a place to land. But if you are jumping and extending your legs, well, where's your landing radius? What am I supposed to do as an official? The defensive player doesn't have any rights? The defensive player doesn't have any territory? So it's almost like if you're going to manipulate your landing area, it's almost like the IRS. If I was a company and I was manipulating my taxes, the IRS could say, all right, we want some of this territory back. We're going to audit you with a finer tooth comb than we audit other similar companies because we feel you're trying to manipulate us, the IRS. And the IRS says, I don't have to audit everybody similarly. If we think you are manipulating our tax system, we will audit you with more ferocity, with more volume, with more agents. And the NBA is saying, all right, if you're trying to manipulate us, and by the way, James Harden is, this last year, James Harden added a dimension to his game, the fall down. Greg, you watch almost every Rockets game. He falls 5 times a game. That's not because his equilibrium got worse in the last 12 months. He is trying to add a layer of manipulation to his game. And the refs are like, okay. And this whole year, they've struggled with officiating. And there's been a lot of complaints. But then you get to the playoffs, and all the young officials are done. And now it's veteran NBA officials. And they're not going to let him manipulate them like young officials do. So here was the great response from Draymond Green to Harden complaining about this call in the refs.
I've been fouled by James on a James three-pointer before. I ain't trying to hear that. Nah, I ain't going with that one. I'm straight.
Yeah, he's not going to go with that one. So the NBA came out with their 2-minute report today, and they said Harden initiated the contact. So, and I said this earlier, it gets cold every year in the winter. It's my responsibility to buy a coat. I don't blame the weather. And every year in the playoffs, by the second round, officials allow more contact. That is not the official's fault. You have to be aware of that as an organization. And I think Chris Broussard brought up an interesting point. The Rockets came into the series thinking they were going to win this thing at the free throw line. They thought we're going to manipulate this, and I don't think it worked.